Radio Catskill. From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. And I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here at MEEP on the eve of a big holiday weekend. Coming up, we've got news for you. North Country Congresswoman and potential GOP gubernatorial candidate Elise Stefanik was in Binghamton this week and spoke about Immigration Customs Enforcement, or ICE, officer recruitment. But first, to get us started, as we usually do on a Thursday evening, we've got the latest local news from Philip Pantuso, Times Union Hudson Valley, including an update on the acting Ulster County clerk who's being sued by the state of Texas, multi-million dollar renovations at Bear Mountain State Park, and we start with a story about the state comptroller saying that the lack of access to health care for rural New York counties is alarming. I spoke to Philip Pantuso earlier this afternoon. Philip, welcome back to the local edition.
Always good to be with you.
There's a report from the state comptroller's office about health care in the state. You mentioned a similar report last week that was more about like elder care. Is this just part of the same report?
No, this is a new report from the state comptroller's office that analyzed basically access to health care in rural areas of New York. There's a message from at the beginning of the report that says New York's rural communities are impacted by issues similar to urban and suburban communities, but the rural nature of these areas frequently requires different approaches to finding solutions. And this report was born out of a series of roundtables in the Hudson Valley and Finger Lakes that the state comptroller's office convened back in 2023. And one topic that consistently came up was access to healthcare. He noted even in the Hudson Valley, where healthcare is a major employer, concerns around the care economy emerged. And it dovetails a little bit with that elder care report, but this is sort of specifically looking at it through a sort of geographic lens. And what it found was pretty bad. The report examined 16 rural counties, including Sullivan County and also Greene and Delaware County in the Catskills. And what it found is that is basically an alarming lack of access to basic care, as the report states. In those 16 counties, the average for every 10,000 people was 4 primary care doctors, which is a little less than half of the national average and a little less than half of the state average. And specialties such as OBGYN care, pediatrics, dental care, behavioral care lagged even further behind that.
Okay, so this isn't very good news, and it's even worse news for rural counties, sounds like.
Yeah. And the report has a lot of granular data looking at this shortage in different ways. So one thing I'll point out that I think is kind of interesting here, Sullivan County, for example, has a higher ratio of mental health professionals compared to the other rural counties. But in terms of access to mental health care specifically, it's one of the worst in the state for Medicaid-eligible patients. That's because of these 16 counties, Sullivan County has the highest percentage of residents who are on or eligible for Medicaid. But one of the things the report found is that insurance and transportation really play a huge role in limiting this access to care.
Right. So access is going to most likely disproportionately affect any rural area in that definition, because transportation is always an issue compared to more urbanized areas that have public transport, for example.
Yeah. And the timing of this, you know, like I said, it grew out of a series of roundtables that the comptroller's office did in 2023. And as you noted, it's something they've been looking at for a while. But there's, I think, increased urgency right now. This is stated in the report. They say, of course, this is likely to get worse before it gets better due to some of the cuts the new requirements for eligibility for Medicaid that will impact both Medicaid and some of the lower level, like essential plans that New York State offers that were in the One Big Beautiful Bill, the big omnibus budget bill that the federal government passed recently.
Okay, so the comptroller's report is pretty clear-eyed about this and pretty damning of the whole situation, but does it offer any solutions?
Yeah, so there are a couple of solutions in this report. One is to try to there's more flexibility with federal loan repayment programs that are offered to doctors who work in underserved areas, which is a categorization based on access to healthcare. And there is a program that I've just checked. It's still apparently available that's offered through the federal government to immigrants who train in the U.S. under a J-1 visa who currently they must return to their home country for 2 years upon completion. But that requirement can be waived if they work in an underserved area for at least 3 years. But it's clearly not doing enough. We talked to a provider at a rural health consortium called Hudson Headwaters, who noted that immigrant medical graduates in particular have declined. And so in 2015, immigrants made up 48% of medical graduates in the state of New York. Last year, that was down to 29%. Hard to say exactly why this is the case, but obviously the federal government's posture toward immigrants has changed a lot, particularly under the new Trump administration. We are now a more hostile country to immigrants. And so that's one reason that was speculated by this doctor that we spoke with. That doctor had mentioned that there are a few new sort of rural health consortiums coming online that have partnered with teaching hospitals, like the Albany Medical Center and the University of Vermont's Dental Residency Program, to have residents treat patients, particularly in rural areas, as a way to try to kind of patch some of these access gaps. Hard to say how much that's working so far, but it is one solution that at least some healthcare providers are trying out.
But as you're identifying there, the climate of our times, the political climate and the its impacts on our social infrastructure, it's almost like a double whammy for rural counties like those in the Catskills, like Sullivan and Green, because, again, just to recap two things you point out there, there's the impacts on Medicaid due to the One Big Beautiful Bill being signed into law, and then also just the climate around immigration. It's already tough to get access to healthcare here, as you said, and these things aren't helping.
Yeah. One other potential solution worth noting is that health centers are expanding telehealth services. This is something we obviously saw increased pretty dramatically during the pandemic, particularly the early days during the lockdowns. That has had some positive signs, particularly on things like mental health. But of course, there's a whole landscape of healthcare that cannot be provided virtually, and so there's only so far that will go to address the problem.
And as we've reported here on the local edition in the past year, there is less state funding for telehealth initiatives, at least in some rural areas. So the hits keep on coming.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's get an update on a story we've been following right along, and that's the case of acting county clerk in Ulster County, Taylor Brooke, who's being sued by the AG of Texas. Last week, you reported with us that, the Ulster County Legislature voted to use county funds to retain counsel. But the surprise that we learned earlier this week, we reported on it on Tuesday here, is that Taylor Brooke already had counsel. So what are the updates you can give us on this interesting twist in the story?
Yeah, this was definitely a surprise, I think, to just about everybody, including county lawmakers. So that vote happened on August 19th. Party line vote in the county legislature to pull $50,000 from the county's contingency fund to hire a civil rights attorney for the acting county clerk, Taylor Brook. As I talked about last week, the big concern that Republicans who voted unanimously against the bill had about it, or the resolution, sorry, not the bill, was what exactly they were committing themselves to. They felt that they didn't know how expensive the attorney would be, and if the case were to wind its way through the federal courts, maybe all the way up to the Supreme Court, as many people expect, it's obviously going to cost much, much, much more than $50,000. Well, what no one knew at the time was that as of at least August 1st, the county had already retained an attorney through for Taylor Brook. And this gets a little bit confusing. What we can't say for sure is that nobody communicated that to the county legislature. But this attorney, it's a man named Andrew Chelly, who's a pretty prominent civil rights attorney at a boutique firm down in Manhattan. He filed a legal document about a couple of days before the vote on the resolution, saying that his firm had been retained by Brook and by Ulster County on August 1st. And this filing was just to request an extension in a hearing in the case because they had just been retained and they were trying to get up to speed. So it was technically public for a couple of days, but again, nobody actually let the county legislature know. So I asked Taylor Brook about this specifically. Why didn't you tell the county legislature? And he said that he didn't really think it was his place because while, of course, it's his lawyer, it's a lawyer for his case, the entire agreement was arranged by the county attorney's office. And I have not seen this agreement. The county attorney's office has not gotten back to me. But what I have been told by the county executive's office is that that agreement included a retainer, and the agreement noted that the lawyer that they were hiring, this man Andrew Chelly, knew that the funding to pay for it was not quite in place yet, and that there would be only a limited amount of funding. So, you know, this agreement was entered. He began serving as his lawyer. 2.5 weeks pass. Nobody tells the county lawmakers. It only became public when the Kingston Wire, a hyperlocal news site here, reported on it. I followed up that reporting the following day and also broke a little bit of news, which was that this man, Andrew Chelly, has agreed to work pro bono once that $50,000 has been spent down. So that obviously raises a few more questions, which is, okay, if he's going to work for the $50K at the start, would he have worked for less than that? Would he have worked for pro bono from the start? I asked those questions. He didn't answer them. What Taylor Brook told me is that he had tried to find a pro bono lawyer from the start and was having a lot of trouble. He speculated that that was because, you know, a lot of law firms are facing retribution from the Trump administration for taking on pro bono civil rights work. And so that's really had a chilling effect on those efforts. But yeah, that's the update. It's kind of confusing, but a lot of people have been talking about it here in Ulster County.
Yeah, I bet. And, you know, I would say one good thing, you say it answers a big question that the legislature had when they had their vote last week. Because one of the questions was like, well, if we're putting up money for this and this goes all the way to Supreme Court, what are we going to be on the hook for? It's like, well, okay, well now we've got somebody who'll do this pro bono beyond a certain point. But, if you and I, or because you asked the question that I was thinking, it's like, boy, would he have done it for less if they had known that? So I can imagine there are legislators asking that question too.
Yeah, for sure. I was given a statement by Jason Kovacs, he's a Republican from the town of Ulster. He chairs the legislature's Laws, Rules, and Government Services Committee. He basically said that Ulster County residents deserve transparency, not surprises. He He said the retention was never disclosed to the legislature or the public before we were asked to consider related matters, nor were we provided the name of the law firm. That's unacceptable. Basic good government requires timely disclosure when public funds and official actions are implicated. And what Acting County Clerk Brooke told me is that he was not sure exactly when the retainer was solidified. Certainly he knew about it before the August 19th vote in the county legislature. Apparently the county attorney was on vacation during much of the discussion that was happening about the resolution to fund this attorney in committee meetings, right, which would have been probably the time to alert them. Maybe he's still on vacation because it's been now 5 days since I called him and left him a voicemail and he hasn't gotten back to me.
That was going to be my last question. It's like, okay, so since you published this other weekend, have you finally heard from the county attorney? And the answer is no.
The answer is no.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm going to be interested to see what the county attorney has to say. Are you going to be publishing something once you do hear from him?
If I get an explanation from him, I'll definitely publish an update. I think it's worth saying real quick too that the decision to hire an outside attorney came from the county attorney's office. I might have mentioned this last week, but basically because this case is likely going to be a long-running case, it's about an issue that is really essentially a state issue and maybe eventually a national issue, these telehealth shield laws. There's an expectation that the case may grow, like more defendants may be added to it if they file lawsuits in other states. It may end up becoming a federal case. And so since the scope of the work is beyond what, you know, the little Ulster County Attorney's Office can do. But why he then didn't communicate to the county legislature is a question I would love to have answered.
Talking to Philip Pantuso, Times Union, Hudson Valley. We've got more news, and we've got more news from Ulster County. So we'll be getting to that in just a moment. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
The Chinese government wants to control the narrative in these huge diaspora communities. Chinese Americans in New York City, all 600,000 of them, have freedom of speech. They can say whatever they want. That's not the case back in China, and they want to squish it like a bug.
I'm Rachel Abrams. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
It's the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Talking to Philip Pantuso, Times Union, Hudson Valley. Philip, left off talking about Ulster County. You've got an update about Ulster County, and this involves people heating their homes.
Yeah, so this is a cool initiative that that Ulster County approved a while back, but is now kind of setting into motion with the approval of a contract during the same county legislature meeting, incidentally. So Ulster County residents who live in mobile or manufactured homes are now eligible to receive energy and saving improvements, such as the installation of new heat pumps, weatherization, and new insulation, and it will be free. This is going to be funded by some money that the county appropriated as part of the budget, as well as a $50,000 grant from the Bank of Green County. This is part of a big initiative called Better Homes for All that County Executive Jen Metzger announced last year as part of her budget process. At the time, as our story notes, there was much more federal assistance for energy efficiency upgrades under the Inflation Reduction Act, but the Trump administration has sort of scaled some of that back or worked to undermine it. And so it was not a slam dunk that the funding would be available one way or another for this program, but the county legislature approved a contract for a local nonprofit that can do this work, and it's going to start moving on this program in the coming weeks.
All right, so can you give me some more details on the goals of this program, and also who qualifies for it?
Yeah, so the program is available to households with income up to 80% of the area median income who own their mobile homes. Those homes must also be structurally sound and up to code. The upgrades will also require the authorization of the park owners who own the land. The plan is to serve at least 12 mobile homes through the program. They're hoping to get much more than that. And there's an effort now to try to reach out to find eligible homes that might benefit from this program. Our article has contact information for people at the county level who are overseeing it, and who, you know, people who think they might qualify can reach out to. The reason I think this program is kind of interesting is because it is a really tangible way that local government is trying to help people both save money and reduce emissions. Mm-hmm. And it's an example, obviously, of those two things kind of going hand in glove. It is also a pretty unique program. There was only one other county in the state with anything similar. That's in Tompkins County. They are also replacing like propane and other heating implements with electric heat pumps. But that program is not entirely free for residents.
Is this something that possibly might have legs and get replicated in other counties?
We'll see. I think it will probably have to. Well, I'll probably have to wait and see how effective it is. Mm. It's the kind of thing where there will probably have to be some sort of groundswell of support or outcry for it. But I could certainly see, particularly in counties like, you know, that share similarities with Ulster and Tompkins, in that they're left-leaning counties with lots of rural areas and large, sort of economically challenged populations wanting to try out something like this, as long as they can get the money for it, of course, which will be a bit harder under the current federal climate.
Right, right. Well, finally, before we go, Philip, we're heading into a holiday weekend here. I hope you've got something fun lined up. I've got four different public events that I'll be going to. Three of them benefit the radio station, so it's busy, busy. But I know a lot of people like to, you know, go out, vacation, or camp out, or cook out. And, you know, the state parks are a place where you can do that. But the people who might be heading to Bear Mountain State Park this Labor Day, by the time we roll around to next Labor Day or the one after that, they might be seeing a different Bear Mountain Park when they go. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So Governor Kathy Hochul's office on Tuesday announced a $25 million renovation coming to Bear Mountain State Park, which is 115 years old, one of the oldest state parks in the New York State Parks system. This is going to ensure the park's facilities not only meet the needs of today, but will serve generations to come, the governor said in a statement. And it's going to do a lot of different things. The kind of headline takeaways are that it's going to create a destination playground set into the slope of Bear Mountain with multi-leveled play areas, rock scrambles, and slides up to 70 feet in length. Apparently, some of these play elements and structures will represent the history of the park, and there's going to be a lot of native plantings that will be added. They're also going to expand picnic areas, do a lot of landscape enhancements, construct new public restrooms and gathering plazas, and modernize a lot of the infrastructure, among other initiatives. And as you noted, this work is they're starting right after Labor Day. I'm going to assume maybe Tuesday. And then the work is scheduled to be completed by the summer of 2027. So about 2 years there if they meet their scheduled timeline. The park is going to stay open as it normally would during that time, though there will be some capacity restrictions around the areas where they're doing this work.
Okay, so just so they'll be able to do the work and people will still be able to use and enjoy the park while they're doing it.
That's what the governor's office is saying.
That's the plan. That's what the governor. So now that's something you can investigate when it starts happening and see if the governor was right and hold her to account. Well, we've been talking to Philip Pan, Tuso Times Union, Hudson Valley. All of these stories are up now at timesunion.com. Philip, I thank you as always for doing this work and taking the time to talk to us about it. But also, I wish you a happy holiday weekend coming up.
Happy holidays to you as well.
We do have one more story before we go tonight. North Country Congresswoman and possible gubernatorial candidate Elise Stefanik was in Binghamton on Tuesday, and she addressed concerns that a new recruiting campaign by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, will make it harder for local police to hire new officers. WSKG's Celia Clark has more.
ICE hopes to recruit 10,000 new enforcement officers. They say the jobs come with good salaries, federal benefits, and for some, signing bonuses of up to $50,000. It's all funded by the big domestic policy bill passed by Congress and signed by President Trump on July 4th. Binghamton Mayor Jared Cram says the new federal push creates challenges for local forces trying to recruit. Cram, a Republican, spoke to WSKG in July when the ICE hiring campaign began.
I am concerned, and mayors across upstate New York, across the country, should be very concerned that already in a competitive workforce where we're struggling to sometimes try to, you know, recruit and retain young officers, that will only be made harder if there's now this rush to hire 10,000 as part of the federal government.
Stefanik was a powerful advocate for the bill. She says she'll continue to support local law enforcement in Congress. But, she says, the recruiting problem won't be solved with money alone.
The problem in New York, where you've seen a historic number of retirements, is because of Kathy Hochul and single-party Democrat laws, whether it's failed bail reform and putting criminals first. This is the reason why you're seeing law enforcement retire and the difficulties of recruiting.
An FBI article identified recruiting as a challenge across the country as far back as 2019. It says the situation has gotten worse since the pandemic. Stefanik made her remarks at the annual Broome County Republican Committee's clam bake. She's expected to announce her run against Governor Kathy Hochul in November. Celia Clark, WSKG News.
Thank you to Celia Clark, WSKG, and the New York Public News Network for that report. And thank you for being here with me this evening. I'm Jason Dole, and that was the Local Edition. Patricio Rabai will be here with you tomorrow for more Local Edition. Tim Bruno will be here in the morning at 10 with Radio Chatskill. And we have a big weekend full of events. All of the information is up at WJFFradio.org. And I will be at all of these events starting tomorrow evening, going from 5 to 7, it's Putt-Putt for Public Radio at Putt-Putt Van Winkle up in Bovina, New York. If you're in that area, if you're out there, Andes, Margaretville, Delhi, come on out and say hi. That's happening tomorrow. The big thing is the music sale, our music yard sale. The second of three music sales that we have in person all year is happening right here at Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, on Route 52, 10 to 3 on Saturday, 10 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. You're looking for records, vinyl. We've got 45s. A big stack of 45s came in. Also, CDs, cassettes, lots of musical oddities, musical equipment. Some of it's been refurbished and is ready to play your records or cassettes. Get here early to get the good things and come at any time to get a great deal. The Radio Catskill Music Yard Sale, 10 to 3 here on Saturday. And then, well, to celebrate, the last big fundraising event in person of the summer for us is Pints for Public Radio happening at Catskill Brewery in Livingston Manor. I keep wanting to say Radio Catskill Brewery, but we're partnering on this. They're going to donate proceeds when folks come out, going from 2 to 5 on Sunday. Pints for Public Radio. I will be there. You can buy me a beer. I think only a few people will be able to do that because I can only have so many, you know. But come out with a friend, buy them one as well, and stand up for public radio. Raise a glass for public radio and, you know, support Radio Catskill while also having a great time and wrapping up the summer with a bang. It's going to be a blast. All of the info, all the details up at WJFFradio.org. We got Claire coming up at 7 with Ramble Tamble, 2 hours of great music, kicking off our great Thursday night music lineup. But before that, we've got more news for you next from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.